You know, it's really kind of difficult for us living in the modern world to understand the late medieval norm that a state had to have a single religion that all of its subjects observed. You'd be hard-pressed to find a European of the 16th century who didn't assume that had to be the case. But the only group who didn't see it that way were the Anabaptists. And even among them, there were small groups. You may remember the extremists who tried to set up a New Jerusalem at Munster, who did advocate a state church. Classic Anabaptists wanted religious tolerance, but they were persecuted for that belief. As we've seen in the story of the church in Germany and is hammered out in the Peace of Augsburg, peace was secured by deciding some region would be Lutheran, others Catholic, by the principle of whose realm, whose religion. That a ruler's religion determined his subject's religion. Under Augsburg, people were free, or at least they were supposed to be, to relocate to another region if a ruler's religion didn't align with their convictions. The many wars of religion that washed over Europe in general, and France in particular, is evidence that the idea that a state could have only one permissible religion, it didn't work. Even the Edict of Nantes, which was passed by King Henry IV after the bloody St. Bartholomew's Day massacre, had only guaranteed the survival of French Protestantism by granting them a number of cities as enclaves in an otherwise Roman Catholic realm. So, we've sketched out now the Reformation in Germany, France, England, Scotland, and the Low Countries, as well as Scandinavia. In this episode now, we're going to take a look at Spain. Before the Reformation reached the Iberian Peninsula, many had hoped that the Spanish Church would lead the way in long overdue reform. There is no question that Queen Isabella's faith was earnest, and she and Cardinal Jiménez de Cisneros, they implemented a massive reform, including a renewal of biblical studies centered on the Complutensian Polyglot Bible. Now, a polyglot is similar to our modern-day parallel Bible, you know, where you have various versions of the Bible set in parallel columns. A polyglot doesn't have several versions in the same language. It's several languages side by side in parallel columns. The Complutensian polyglot had Hebrew, Latin, and Greek texts of the Old Testament, as well as Aramaic of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. And then the New Testament contained Greek and Latin. Spain also had many humanists like Erasmus, some of them in high places, who longed for reform. The arrival of the Protestant Reformation saw attitudes in Spain change. You'll remember that at Worms, that upstart monk Martin Luther defied the Emperor Charles V, who just happened to also be King Charles I of Spain. Now, I want to take a little time out here to briefly drill down on the Emperor Charles V, because he was simply a massive figure in the 16th century European affairs. There's little doubt that Charles was a devout Roman Catholic who regarded Protestantism as a heresy, but his actions reveal a more political calculation than one that was driven by doctrinal purity. At the Diet of Worms in 1521, he condemned Luther, yet later he made pragmatic accommodations with Protestant princes when he needed their military support. He even allowed Protestant worship when it served his interests against the Pope or France. The Peace of Augsburg in 1555, which Charles reluctantly accepted, essentially admitted defeat, allowing princes to determine their territory's religion. A purely theological stance would never have compromised like that. Now, Charles saw the Reformation as an existentially political threat to imperial unity, even though he personally believed Catholic doctrine. His opposition was theologically informed, but it was politically motivated. Okay, back to Spain. The Spanish Inquisition, previously aimed at Jews and those accused of practicing the occult, turned its attention toward those calling for reform and anything that smacked of the dreaded Lutheranism. Several leading humanists fled to places like the Low Countries, where they were welcome. Others stayed in Spain and tried to lay low for a while, devoting themselves to their studies and, well, hoping that the storm would pass them by. The Inquisition, it wasn't able to stop the Lutheran contagion, as it was called. Valladolid and Seville became centers of Reformation, despite frequent burnings at the stake by the Inquisition. A monastery near Seville was a reformed center where Bibles and Protestant books were smuggled in barrels labeled as oil and wine. When one of the smugglers was captured and burned, a dozen of the monks fled, agreeing to meet in a year in Geneva. And one of them became pastor to a Spanish congregation there. Another, Cassiodoro de Reina. He spent the rest of his life translating the Bible into Spanish, a recognized masterpiece of Spanish literature released in 1569. A few years later, another of the 12, Cipriano de Valera, he revised de Reina's version, which is known today as the Reina-Valera Bible. Okay, we're going to hop over to Italy now. Among the secluded valleys of the Alps, the ancient community of the Waldensians continued a secluded but threatened existence. They were repeatedly attacked by papal armies hoping to suppress their supposed heresy, but they had long stood firm in their mountain fastness. By the early 16th century, the movement lost steam as constant persecution suppressed them. Many among them felt that the price paid for disagreeing with Rome was just too high, and increasing numbers returned to Catholicism. But then, strange rumors were heard. News of a great Reformation arrived. An emissary sent to inquire about these rumors returned in 1526 and announcing they were true. In Germany, Switzerland, France, and even more distant regions, dramatic change was afoot. Many of the doctrines of the reformers matched what the Waldensians had held for over 300 years. More delegations met with leading reformers like Martin Bucer, who warmly received them and affirmed most of their beliefs. Now, they suggested points where they differed and where the Waldensians ought to consider revising their stand to bring it into closer alignment with Scripture. In 1532, the Waldensians convened a synod where they adopted the main tenets of the Protestant Reformation. And by doing so, they became the oldest Protestant church, existing three centuries before the Reformation. Now, sadly, that didn't make things easier for the Waldensians. Their communities in southern France, whose lands were more vulnerable than the secluded Alpine valleys where they originated, were invaded and virtually exterminated. The survivors fled to the Alps, and then a series of edicts ensued, forbidding attendance of Protestant churches and commanding attendance at the Roman Catholic Mass. Waldensian communities in southern Italy were also exterminated. Large armies raised by the Pope, the Duke of Savoy, and several other powerful nobles wanting to prove their loyalty to Rome repeatedly invaded the Waldensian mountain enclaves, only to be routed by the defenders. On one occasion, six men with crude firearms held back an entire army at a narrow pass while others climbed the mountains above. And when rocks began raining on them, the invaders were routed. Then, in what has to be a premier, can a guy catch a break moment? When the Waldensians had a prolonged respite from attack, a plague broke out, decimating their population. Only two of their pastors managed to survive. Their replacements came from the Reformed centers of Switzerland, bringing about even closer ties between the Waldensians and the Reformed Church. In 1655, all Waldensians living in northern Italy were commanded, under penalty of death, to forfeit their lands in 3 days, selling them to Catholics. In that same year, the Marquis de Pianezza, he was given the assignment of exterminating the Waldensians. But he was convinced that if he invaded the Alps, his army would suffer the same fate as earlier invaders. And so he offered peace to the Waldensians. They'd always said that they'd only fight a war of defense, and so he made peace with the Marquis and welcomed the soldiers into their homes, where they were fed and housed against the bitter cold. That's a lovely story, isn't it? Well, wait, because it's not over. 2 days later, at the prearranged time, the guests turned on their hosts, killing men, women, and children. This great victory was celebrated with a Te Deum. It's one of those hymns of praise of thanksgiving to God, as though he'd be pleased by such heinous treachery. Yet still, the Waldensians resisted, hoping that their enemies would make peace with them. King Louis XIV of France, who ordered the expulsion of all Huguenots from France, he demanded that the Duke of Savoy do likewise with his Waldensians. This proved too much for many of them who left the Alps to live in Geneva and other Protestant areas. A few insisted on remaining on their ancestral lands where they were constantly menaced. It wasn't until 1848 that the Waldensians and other groups were granted freedom of worship in Italy. And we might hope that, you know, that would be a time for a breather, right? But again, it wasn't to be. Because just 2 years after that, famine broke out in the long-exploited and now overpopulated Alpine valleys. And so after much debate, the first of many Waldensian groups left for Uruguay and Argentina, where they flourished. In 1975, the two Waldensian communities, one on each side of the Atlantic, made it clear that they were still just one church by deciding to be governed by a single synod that would have two sessions, one in the Americas in February, the other in August in Europe. Now, the Waldensians, they weren't the only Protestant presence in Italy. Among others, Juan de Valdez and Bernardino Occhino, they deserve mention. No, Juan de Valdez wasn't a grower of coffee. He was a Spanish Protestant humanist along the same lines as Erasmus. When it was clear that Charles V was determined to wipe Protestantism out of Spain, he fled to Italy in 1531. He settled in Naples, where he gathered a group of colleagues who devoted themselves to Bible study. They didn't seek to make their views public and were moderate in their Protestant leanings. Among the members of this group was Julia Gonzaga. She was a woman of such fame that the Sultan in Constantinople sought to have her kidnapped. But it was another member of this group, Bernardino Occhino, a famous and pious preacher who was twice elected general of the Capuchins. You may remember that they were a branch of the Franciscans and thoroughly Roman Catholic. Occhino openly promulgated Protestant principles. When the Inquisition threatened him, he fled to Geneva. Then he kept going to Basel, Augsburg, Strasbourg, London, and finally Zurich. His wandering, it wasn't just geographical. They were also doctrinal. And he became ever more radical in his views, eventually rejecting the Trinity and defending polygamy, which partly explains why he probably had to move around a lot. He kept getting kicked out of town. He died of the plague in 1564. And I think it best that we stop right there. We're going to finish our tour around the edges of the Reformation in our next episode.